Raised Rowdy.
All right, y'all. Welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. My name is Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nikki T.
We have Craig Campbell here in the studio today. Welcome, bud.
I'm so glad you said Ozon, because it's a debate amongst musicians. Is it Ozon, Ozan?
Ozan, yeah. I get Ozan a lot, or Ozon for sure. It's also weird when you like you're not super confident around someone's name and you're like, hey, this is my friend Nick. You know?
Welcome to my life introing people on stage.
Oh, like, I can't imagine.
See the last name, yeah. But I'm like, how do you say that last name?
Roll the dice.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll ask before, I'm like, hey, is this the correct way to say your last name? And they're like, yes. And then I get up on stage and I like still freeze, right. You know? Yeah.
Or you've been saying it for so long a certain way, and then somebody finally corrects you and it's like, you just can't fix it.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm just burnt in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad to be here, man. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome, man. Awesome. I feel like I've known you for a while, probably 2016, I think, if not longer.
Yeah, I think you were working with Michael.
Yeah,
Michael Ray,
and we went to Australia together.
That's right. Yeah.
And I was just telling the story the other day when we were at the Abbey smoking cigars. Jason Miller came with us, and we were telling the story about the drummer that you brought to Australia.
Oh my God!
Will you tell the story a little bit?
There was so many stories to tell about that trip. Let's back up a minute. Okay. I got invited to Australia again. Mm-hmm. I've been blessed. I've had a couple of songs do really well over there, and so booked the gig. Everything was set. Apparently, Australia, the festival itself, really wanted the Dixie Chicks,
mm-hmm.
and I still call them the Dixie Chicks, and I don't care. I'm not ever going to not call them the Dixie Chicks.
Yeah.
But the only way the Dixie Chicks would agree is if they moved the festival 2 weeks, like from when they, so they booked me for this date. Dixie Chicks weren't available except for the 2 weeks following. So they moved the entire festival for the Dixie Chicks. So when that happened, my drummer had already booked his wedding and he's like, man, I can't.
It's a wedding.
The facility's booked. The invitations have been sent. I'm like, man, I get it. No worries. I got a guy,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I've known this dude from almost before I moved to Nashville. He's great. And he's one of those guys that's just great at everything. Great golfer, great singer, great piano player. Just whatever he touches, he's great at it. I'm like, no worries. No, let's just roll with it. And I'm no issues at all. And, we get there, and it was one of those land, change clothes, go straight to the gig.
In Australia.
Yeah, it was rough. Get there, first night, disaster. So, the next morning, we all get up, and I'm like, I'm not going to say his name, but I said, hey, man, let's run over these songs. And so we start running over them, and he's not writing anything down. He's not cataloging these specific cues that he missed big time. And I'm like, okay, no worries. Second show, same exact issues. And almost as if he had never even heard these songs before. And it was awful. One thing I remember, so specific, on Outskirts of Heaven, and Outskirts of Heaven was my current single at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Second verse is full-blown snare. Let's go. Full snare, he would switch back to side stick, and I'm over here, I'm literally singing and doing this at the same time, like
mm-hmm.
with my like let's, and he just, I guess he had his damn eyes closed or whatever. So that was the second. We had three shows, no change. We talk about it. He's like, I guess he's trying to remember it all. And by then I'm like, It's okay. We got one more show. It's fine. We get to the final gig, which was the day of the Dixie Chicks performance. And this dude whips out his own t-shirts with his face on them and asks, can he throw them out? During my show, throw his t-shirts out into the audience. I said, No. No, not at all. And then not only that, he shows up and he's wearing something, and I'm like, you're not wearing that on stage. Yeah, it was awful. And I remember this particular show too. He gets off from the tracks. He gets off, and we're over there. We're all over there, like, kill the tracks, kill the tracks. And he was just like, so Carnes runs over there and karate chops the tracks rig to turn it off while playing bass, and mm-hmm. it was just
chaos.
And then the icing.
Oh,
on
that's my favorite part of
the cake. That night, it's, you know, we stay for the show. We watch you guys. We watch the chicks, and he decides he wants to go out. I was like, okay, it's fine, you know. But we got lobby calls super early to fly home. No, next morning he's not there.
Oh,
nowhere,
man,
to be found. So we're like, let's go. We get to the. We get to the airport. He finally, we're trying to get him on the phone, and I think we finally get on the plane, and over the PA system on the plane, somebody says, "Will the party responsible for blah 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 ring your button?" And Maddie, she goes, mm-hmm. and so. He finally made it to the airport, hammered drunk,
and
they wouldn't let him on the plane.
Well, I actually saw part of this because we were going through customs or whatever, and he had a bottle of vodka
with him?
In his backpack or something, some sort of...
Every day, a whole bottle, every day.
And they wouldn't let him through, and so he starts drinking it like before he goes in. Like, you know, like if you...
Instead of throwing it away.
Like if you had a bottle of water and you had like a little bit left.
Yes.
Yeah. I heard about this later, but...
Yes. And I was like, whoa, what's that guy doing? I didn't realize it was Craig's drummer.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I, you know, I still love the dude. I mean, what happened is a thing, and it was it's a great story to tell. I feel like he's kind of turned things around since then. But yeah, he had to stay in Australia on his own dime for like another day or two.
Have you ever bought a flight home from Australia? It's not cheap.
It's not cheap at all.
Can't imagine. No.
Yeah.
I've only been to Canada and Mexico. Those are pretty, you know, reasonable.
Yeah.
That was wild, though. Yeah. I'm wild. I forgot about that.
Yeah. I was thinking about that the other day. I'm like, whoops.
Crazy.
I mean, of all the places to get stranded.
Yeah, Australia. You're
it could be
literally
worse.
Halfway around the world.
Yeah.
I mean, nuts. Maybe not money-wise, but anyway, so a lot has changed since then.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So I think it'd be kind of fun to kind of fill us in of what's been going on.
Let's start from 2016. You know,
please.
We got Outskirts of Heaven.
Yes. Great song, obviously.
Was rocking up the charts, and this is the story of my life. And then I go on a cruise. I go on a cruise in January of 2017. And on a cruise, you know, you don't have your cell service. Mm-hmm. It's not great. You get some of the boat
Wi-Fi.
It's
like $40 a day or something.
And... I finally we make a stop, and I get to a place, and I hook up to the Wi-Fi, and my phone just starts going nuts. And there was a voicemail from the record label president saying, hey, give me a call. I got some news I want to tell you before it hits the trades. By then, the trades had already come out that they were selling the record label. And I got a bunch of theories on why Outskirts of Heaven wasn't a bigger hit. You know, it only went to 24, which is kind of crazy. I have a feeling that was one of the biggest parts of it was when a record label closes or sells, if you will, people start, when like a new regime is coming, there's a chance that they will bring their own teams in. So there's people that I think start worrying about losing their jobs. And so that I feel like the eye was taken off of the ball mm-hmm. during that song. So that happened. Wasn't long after that announcement that Outskirts was done on the radio, on the chart. So that happened, and then we put out another single, and it went top 40, but that was about as high as it went. That was also about the same time when me and Broken Bow decided we should part ways. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Out.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was like, man, this really hurts. I have always had a record deal. For up until this point, it was 8 years of having that thing that you felt like you needed to be successful in country music. You had to have a record deal. But I also could feel things were changing, and you were seeing things happening. You were seeing people being super successful underground, and I'm so in the immediate, like, oh, this sucks. And then I said, hold on a minute, what does a record label do that I need them for? And the only thing that I saw was radio.
Yeah.
And so then, mentally and family wise, I was in a way different spot than I was when I signed my record deal. And so I made the decision to stay independent, and that was in 2020. And man, I have had so much fun making music and just doing my own thing for the past 5 years.
Yeah.
It's been great.
Yeah. It's like you're kind of more, for better or for worse, you're more of a master of your own destiny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, a record label, I can't tell you how many times I had a great idea and ran it up the flagpole to whoever at whatever record label, and just for them to say, we don't like that idea. But we want you to do this, and you really don't have a choice. That's frustrating. They're picking music for you to record, or at least this was my experience. I had people making decisions on the music that I recorded that had no idea who I was. Never been to my house, never met my family, never met my girls, never got to know me. Some of those guys never even come to a show. I had a guy come to a show one time. It was right after they sold to BMG. He was the big dog at BMG. And he came, we did the Broken Bow BMG thing during CMA Fest. And I went out there, and I had one goal. And Miller can tell you about this too. I said, I'm going to crush it. That's,
hell yeah.
That's because I'm on the same, because it's all Broken Bow. So I'm on the same stage with everybody. Dustin Lynch, Al Dean, all those guys. And I said, I'm going to make it difficult for them to follow me. That was my mindset. Exactly.
Yeah.
And we did. And the guy met me when I got done. He's like, you're really good. I said, dude, okay, thanks. I said, you just come to this realization. Like, how long have you guys been, have taken over this thing? You just like 6 months already, and you just now come to a show? Like, that's what I felt like. And that's the worst part about having a record deal, I think, is those people are making decisions on your behalf that affect your whole life, your whole career, everything, but they have no idea who you are. And that's the beauty of being independent, because I don't have to worry about that no more.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff, it's like you're saving money doing some stuff yourself.
Yeah.
And then the stuff that you can't do, you just hire out, you know? Like, hey, I don't know how to talk to a magazine. You can hire someone to do your PR for a certain thing and not just have someone on a retainer all the time.
But you know what's crazy?
Tell us.
Is every record deal that I've had, I had my own publicist to help their publicist because they weren't focused on me.
Yep.
And I needed that. I had one artist to worry about, right. Me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't tell you how many times I've been told we got 15 artists to worry about. We can't be worried about what's, and I'm like, what? Out of my own pocket paying for a publicist.
Yep.
To basically supplement their it was.
Yeah. Rough. Yeah. I mean, you got to think about it like this, like they're in the business of this big business. You're in the business of you.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, every dollar you put into yourself now is going back to you. Whereas, like, you were paying for a publicist before out of your masters. You know what I mean? So, like, now you get to pick the publicist that believes in what you're doing.
My team.
Yeah, that knows what you're doing.
Team Greg.
Yeah, exactly. So it's powerful, but I mean, you see a lot of label acts that will have their own PR on top of, you know, the label PR.
Yeah, You especially in the early days, if you can afford it, man, you almost have to.
Yeah.
Just because of the fact that they do. I mean, I get it. Like you said, it's a business, and they have to spread it. And you know, if you're a business owner and you have 10 products, and there's these two products over here are selling like crazy, you're going to focus on that. Mm-hmm. And that's I get that part of it.
Yep.
But you got to give these other products a chance.
Yeah. Or stop charging them a tenth of the share between 10 artists for that. You know what I mean?
Like, give me an allowance. Yep. And let me go build my own team.
Yep.
You know. And I feel like that's what's happening these days.
It's starting to come that way.
Yeah, you see super successful artists that don't have record deals that will sign a record deal just for that one piece, and I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah, it's a lot like distribution's becoming big now, right? Because there are resources that a label does really well.
Yeah.
That is hard to do otherwise.
And relationships that you can't substitute.
No, you can't build a relationship in 2 weeks that they've built in 20 years.
Yeah.
So like there are power in that, but at the same time, it's like having people that believe in what you're doing and having people that understand who you are as an artist and where you're trying to go and that believe in that, you can't replace that. Whether that's at a label, whether it's at a management company, whether you craft it together yourself, however that comes to be,
for sure,
you have to have that.
You have to.
Yeah.
And I believe that. And I'm, you know, it's a love hate. I'm very grateful at the success that I've had because of those record labels.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I have enjoyed not having one, you know, recently.
Yeah. A little bit of chaos comes with that too.
Yeah.
You know, like, and the ideas, your ideas are your ideas, and you can then go and craft those into, you know, making them happen.
And if it doesn't work, it's on me.
Mm-hmm.
The record labels, and I don't want this to be a record label bashing thing, but it's like, if you succeed, they take the credit, and if you fail, it's our fault. You know what I mean? But now it's like, if we succeed, I take the credit. If we fail, I take the fall. It's fine.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And also part of the reason like that I brought this up in the first place is because we have a lot of like younger artists that listen to the podcast, I think. So yes. I think it's cool to get someone who's been through it, get their like experience, get, you know, if you have any advice to drop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think 2025 is going to be a year of a lot of clarity on, because for the last year, 2 years, maybe Nashville has been considered the wild, wild west of, like, nobody knows what to do. And if something hits, it's like, how did that happen? Nobody knows how it happened. Mm-hmm. Even record labels have no idea what's going on. But I think there's some paths that are starting to become more clear. And I think one of those is social media and streaming. If you have any spare finances, focus and push it towards that, you know, content. You know, like we were just talking about, just getting good gear and making yourself look good. And it's, I hate that it ain't all about the talent, so to speak. You know, talent's a bonus, it seems like, these days. So, and that would be my advice.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely in the bonus with all the talent for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like music was the one thing that I loved, and I tell people all the time, I didn't choose it, you know, it chose me. Mm-hmm. And I never had a backup plan. This was it. And no matter what level of success I've had or that I hope to have, I'll always play music, whether it be for fun, or just for to satisfy my soul. But very blessed to have been able to make a living doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about, you said, like, the wild west of Nashville. I feel like everything is changing. So I moved here in 2012, and it's, like, a completely different town, like, obviously, like, from a real estate perspective. But, like, the industry is so different now, too. It's, like, even when I moved here, was like iTunes sales and stuff like that. We're like kind of shaking things up. We talk about record labels and radio, but Drew Baldridge just had that, the first independent number one song at country radio.
Yeah.
And I know we chatted a little bit about that before the pod and how it inspired you. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's in 2012. I was the same thing happened, you know, for me, like, because I moved here in 02, signed my deal in 2010. And that's when the end of 2010 is when Family Man came out. And at that moment, it was still a let's take a song, run it up the chart, drop an album. That was the program. But 2011 and 2012, it started transitioning into a singles game, you know, like you were mentioning about iTunes and single downloads. So they were still tracking album sales, but they were really focused on how to get these download numbers up. So it seems like I've been playing catch up this whole time.
Yeah.
But as an independent in 2025, you know, you mentioned Drew. It's very, very inspired by that. Matter of fact, when he decided to do that, I'll be honest, I was skeptical. Even when he was talking about, guys, I'm so excited, I'm top 40, blah blah blah, and I'm like,
been there.
It's now the real work is going to happen, because historically for me, I always had the hardest time with singles between 40 and 30. Like if you getting them top that 30 range. Is when it's just like cement blocks tied to you. It's just tough, man. Because you'll have a song that's having a great week, but then you'll have two superstars debut, and they debut ahead of you. So it's like you might be sitting at 38 with a bullet, and you move up two spots, but then two records debut ahead of you, so you move back two spots. So you're still sitting there, even though you had a great week, and that's week after week after week, and then finally – it's just you can't keep up. But so I was skeptical all the way up to about top 20, and I'm like, oh, here we go. And so when he was able to do that and go all the way and ring the bell at number one, independent, self-funded, and I've known Drew forever. As a matter of fact, I think I met him right after he moved here. And we've written some songs. Him and my wife have written some songs together. And I called him. I said, man, talk to me. How did this all come about? And he told me the bullet points of it all. And I said, okay. So then my wheels started turning. I think I can do this. I know I got the music. So then I went to his number one party, and I met some people that were a part of that whole thing, that part of that team that he put together. And before I could even bring it up, one of the guys that kind of helped him put it all together, he says, you should do it. And I said, that's all I needed to hear. So we got on a phone call, and he says, here's the people that I recommend. And everybody that we called was like, let's do it. And that's where we are. And got a new song coming out this year. Probably, when is this going to air?
Whenever you want, bud.
You tell us.
Well, no, I'm just, so you know, I don't want to say it's coming unless you air it. So
yeah.
New single this year. Totally independent. My own team, paying for it myself. Along with, you know, I got not 100%. All out of my pocket. I got some believers, some really good friends that have a little extra money to invest, and so they said, hey, I want to invest in you, but I'm writing the checks.
Yeah.
So it's so I control where that money goes and how it's spent, and I'm excited. I believe the song. I believe the song is a smash hit song. I have no doubt. Yeah. I have no doubt about that. And I think we can do it.
Well, all right.
I love that.
Let's get into the song.
Let's talk about the song.
Yeah.
The song has had its own journey. I actually recorded this song in 2015. It was actually a part of a six-song project that I cut right when I signed with Broken Bow. Jeremy Stover was producing at the time. And I found this song and I found another song. And the other four were picked, if you will, by the record label head at the time. Mm-hmm. And when we got those six songs back, the two that I picked were my favorites. And I didn't write them. Mm-hmm. But the record, again, the people up top decided to go first single, a song that we recorded that I wrote. And I'm like, okay, that's, I get it. I love the song, but I probably would have went a different direction. And but not only did they not pick one of my songs as like a first single, they told me I couldn't even play these songs for nobody. Don't even play them for your radio team. It was wild. I had that same inside my head. If you could have looked inside, that was what the look I would have given. And so fast forward a couple of years, I get a phone call from Mickey Jack Cones, who produced Outskirts of Heaven, Mas Tequila, we've done a lot of good work together. He said, "Hey man, didn't you cut a song called Yours If You Want It?" I said, "Yeah, cut the shit out of it." And he said, "Well, I just heard it on the Bobby Bones show." I said, "What?" He's like, "Yep. World premiere, Rascal Flatts' new single." I said, "Are you kidding me?" Because I had spent, what, $10,000 on this, recording this song?
Yeah.
And
it wasn't like you demoed it or something.
No, right.
It's paying the Nashville Cats to come in.
It was a record. Yeah. Finished. Done. So now I don't even have an option of putting it on an album.
Yeah.
So I was, but at the same time, it kind of validated me. I said, okay, that's a hit song. And Rascal Flatts took it all the way to number one. Okay. That's one thing.
I didn't know that. That's a crazy story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So fast forward another year or so, and I finally talked Broken Bow into letting me put out an EP. Outskirts of Heaven did well. We were putting out a new single, song called See You Try. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to put out a 6-song EP. And so we put Missing You on the EP and immediately started streaming like a million a month, all on its own. No radio promotion, no playlisting, no nothing. It just organic. And I'm over here going, do y'all see this? Do y'all see what's happening? But again, I think we mentioned it earlier. By then, Broken Bow and me, we had decided we need to probably call it. Shake hands. Good game. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's that. So now I'm independent, 2020, 21, 22. I'm still sitting on this, and I still think this song is a hit. And even before the whole Drew Baldridge thing, I decided I'm going to put together a small little album of songs that were hits of mine and re-record them. Now, me Missing You was not like a radio hit, but it was a streaming hit. Mm-hmm. So I decided to re-record it. And I put part of that album out called Almost Greatest Hits.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so in that process is when the whole Drew Baldridge thing happened. I said, okay, hold on. I'm not going to put this on the record yet. I'm going to hold on to it. And a couple months later is when I went to that party and we talked. So from 2015, this song has been through all the weeds, and now it has made its way out to like, okay, it's time, and you need to send me to radio, and that's what we're gonna do.
That's great.
Wow, it's like a whole butterfly effect thing. I feel like this whole story, it's like if this happened slightly differently, if this happened and the Flatts thing, and it's crazy.
Yeah, no, and that's my whole career, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's everyone's.
It's part of my story too. Like even now that we're going back to radio, I haven't had my day in court, if you will. You know, I haven't You know, a lot of people don't know this, but you've heard of On the Verge.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the first one. When iHeart rolled out that program, my song "Keep Them Kisses Coming" was the very first
On
the Verge mm-hmm. pick, and that was in January of 2014, February maybe, and we're racing up the chart, and sitting at 13, I guess, 14 to 13, and I get a phone call that my record label was closing. I mean, you know what I mean? So that happened. Never was able to go up and hit the number one spot. Outskirts of Heaven, the record label being sold, was a part of my story. And then even with See You Try. See You Try was my fastest top 40 I've ever had. I made it top 40 in 9 weeks. It was crazy. The record label that I was on, Redbow, they dissolved it and rolled me into one of their sister labels, Wheelhouse. And, you know, here I am with a song that's on the radio, top 40, but with a whole brand new team that has no idea who I am. You know, just
right.
Obviously hadn't heard of me and heard my music before because we were under the same roof. But it's just roller coaster, man.
And bad timing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all this has led to now.
Right here.
Which is when you've got the song and you've got the team, so now it's time to go. Are you going to, like, go around and do, like, another radio tour? Or?
So, I've done it.
I know.
I've done it so many times, and I still have a great relationship with radio.
Sure.
And I feel like now I've finally reached a place where I can call these stations myself and say, hey, man, you know what? I mean, if you want me to come hang, I'll come hang. But let's try to coordinate it with a show. Like if I'm coming to, let's call it Kansas City. If you need me to come do something, let me book a show in Kansas City. Let me just route it. Don't make me come out there on my own dime
mm-hmm.
and just to say hey
and circumstance and blah, blah, blah.
Grab my guitar and sing the song. But there's also a bunch of people in radio because it's been going on 7 years since I've been on the radio with a current song. So there's a lot of people that are in the business, in the radio world, that I haven't met yet. So yes and no. I will definitely go out and meet those guys and you know, put a face with a name and all that. And but like an official hardcore radio tour, probably not.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I guess people still do that. I'm sort of out of that. Well, I've done it. I did it with Michael, and I did it with Jana, and I did it with Luke. Obviously, Luke's not doing radio tour anymore, but I remember, like, during COVID, it was, like, the same thing. Like, work from home, people were doing radio tour from home.
That was crazy. Man, you know, I was independent at the time. Wasn't working radio, but I had friends that were. It derailed everything they were doing. You know, like, Trey Landon. I feel I'm one of my best buds in town, and just... I watched it. They were teeing him up really good. And then all of a sudden, you know, the just COVID and the wind was taken out of the sails. And I felt so bad. And he was one of a whole bunch of people that just kind of, it sucked.
Yeah. And I mean, it sucked for a lot of different reasons, obviously.
Yeah.
But getting to do radio tour from the house sounds cheap and better than, you know, the opposite.
We found a way to do a lot of things cheap and efficient
mm-hmm.
during 2020, 2021. I took that opportunity to buy a piece of property and open a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, congrats, man.
Yeah.
So you got your merch on.
Grindstone.
Got it. And a lot of people were like, dude, because a lot of restaurants were closing because of
mm-hmm.
of what was happening. And we took that opportunity to build and also buy some really nice used equipment because people were closing.
Coffee gear is so expensive.
It is.
It's. I remember I went to 8th and Roast and I had an espresso and I went to the barista. I said, this tastes amazing. This was like when I first moved to town. I want to make this at home. And I was like, how do I do that? And he kind of laughed. And he was like, this grinder is a $1,500 coffee bean grinder. And then the espresso machine's like $40,000 or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's nuts.
Crazy.
Oh, yeah.
It's
whatever the numbers are.
We have our main coffee machine. It's automatic, but it's not fully automatic.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have control
of it.
But it was brand new, $17,000.
Yeah.
$17,000.
Crazy.
And then when it breaks down, it's expensive to fix. Wow. It's like a car.
Literally, yeah.
Yeah.
Nuts. And where's the location at?
So we have Grindstone Cowboy is the home location right now is in Eagleville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
We got one that should open in August or September in Shelbyville, Tennessee.
Cool.
And then we have one going in Florida that should open.
Oh, no way.
Quarter one of 2026.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Where in Florida?
A little town called Santa Rosa Beach. 30A kind
of. Oh, gotcha.
Seaside Destin, Blue Mountain.
Yeah, yeah, right on. That sounds like a good gig, owning a coffee shop on the beach.
Yeah. I mean, a good reason to travel down there, too. You know?
Exactly. You know, so like, are you going to move? I was like, no, I'm not moving. I said, but I'll probably spend a lot of time down there.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
I've been to Grindstone, but it was before it opened. When we did a photo shoot down there.
Yeah.
And you drove me over there, and it was like under construction. Kind of. So it's been a minute since I've even been to Eagleville.
Yeah, that's right. You shot, I think it was the Talk Country to Me album cover we shot at the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's an awesome space. I mean, you guys have live music there now too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we just had, I just played there Monday night. And then, we do concerts. I had Mo Pitney recently. Wow. I got Richie McDonald so coming up. And, you know, I've had Thompson Square a couple of times. I've had Tyler Forrest played there. He played two nights in a row. He sold out so fast. And then we got a comedy show coming up that people are pretty fired up about.
Oh, that's great.
A guy named Chris Munch.
So do you all do, like, ticketed events at night there?
Yeah, on those specific shows. But, like, on Fridays and Saturdays, we'll have the occasional free, you know, kind of a lower Broadway setup where, you know, you just come in and there's an acoustic set happening between 5:30, 6, 7:30.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
Some grub, maybe?
Oh, yeah. People, you know, a lot of people don't even realize that we're actually more of a restaurant than a coffee shop. We full-blown menu, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, running a restaurant is so much work. It's like I've worked in a bunch of restaurants. I've done like delivery boy and server and, you know, bartender and all that stuff. And it's just like, it's a lot.
It is. And let me tell you right now, if it wasn't for my wife, Mindy,
shout out to Mindy.
She wouldn't, the place wouldn't be what it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm still doing the music stuff so she took it by the horns, man, and she's a GM. If there's ever been one, boy, she runs that place.
Right on.
Yeah. And it's been a blessing. It's been super successful from day one. And so I would imagine she'd have a different outlook on it if it wasn't.
Yeah.
But she enjoys the hustle and the bustle, because it is doing really well.
And I'm sure she's singing down there sometimes.
She does, man, but you know, she don't sing. She gets up and sings with me every now and again. Mm-hmm.
She lets the daughters do the singing.
Yeah,
now.
She does. She lets the girls, and that's one of the reasons we built the place with a stage. I wanted my girls to have somewhere to play and never have to ask permission.
Yeah.
Like, this is your place, baby. You book it. You tell me you want to play. We'll make it happen.
I remember hearing her sing. I mean, she's probably way older now, obviously, but I remember her. Is it Presley?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember hearing Presley sing it. When you were playing piano when we were shooting at your house.
Oh, yeah. She's light years ahead of me when I was her age. She's 16. Let me play something real quick. No, this was Monday night. She played, she got up and sang with me. But Red Clay Strays.
Damn.
nuts.
Hell yeah.
So proud 16. Of her.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, with the parents she has, it kind of makes
sense. Yeah, I mean,
you know? It's in her blood.
I truly believe that it has a lot to do with, like, Mindy. We had a regular Monday spot on Lower Broadway all the way up to, so we played Monday. She delivered on Wednesday, all the way up. And so with those monitors blaring all the time and music in the car and the guitar reverberating mm-hmm. on her belly for the full 9 months, I really believe that had something to do with it.
100%.
Yeah, I think it was just, yeah.
And then when she's born, it's like, it's not like she's getting away from music at all.
No, it's constant. It was constant. Yeah, so she definitely gets it honest.
That's great.
Well, maybe we'll have her on the podcast in 10 years. You know, yeah. You never know.
Heck, maybe two. You never know.
Yeah, I told her, she's hard at it, man. She's also, I bought her a little recording rig. So she's using Logic Pro. She's got a little Scarlett interface. Got the SM7 here. Mm-hmm. And she's buying these tracks off because she's super pop. She's not, you know, she definitely didn't follow in mom and daddy's genre footsteps.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So she buys these tracks off of beatstars.com and makes her own music, writes her words to it and records her own vocals. It's wild.
That's so cool.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. You must be so proud.
I am. Matter of fact, I went in and made a video the other day of singing. So Dan and Shay put out this Christmas record.
Oh yeah.
So I went in and I said, hey, we're gonna dump this down to an MP3. And I said, I'm going to add the low harmony, and a bass part vocally. And so we split the screens, and she captured my vocals and mixed it. And then I posted it on my socials. She's really good.
That's so cool.
She's like your content manager.
Yep. Yeah. No, she's definitely my like, we're going to go in and cut just some acoustic stuff and let her do that.
That's so cool.
Right on. I do have to say that you're like all the content, I guess, that you've like leveled it up. I think like funny, but like your music's great. And I think that's like probably helping give your, even the older catalog, new life too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, honestly, Maddie, my manager, she, about 3 years ago, she said, hey, we need to look at this TikTok and get your TikTok game up. I said, negative. Because at that time it was dance.
Everybody dancing.
And I said, yeah. I feel like I'm a decent dancer. I said, but I'm not that guy. She said, we have to. I said, no, we don't. She said, yes, we do.
Every manager and every artist
yes.
ever.
And I said, 100%. I said, okay. I said, well, we just have to figure something else out. I'm not doing that.
You're not,
yeah.
Loss, yeah.
Yeah. So, right?
Yeah.
So I said, there's a couple reasons. I said, I got a brand new restaurant. I got these girls, both my daughters in full-time volleyball. I'm touring, writing. I said, I don't have time. I can capture all the content you want, but I don't have time to edit it. I just don't. And on top of that, I don't even know how. I'd have to learn it. I have zero desire to do that. And she said, okay, here's what we're going to do. Let's lean into the funnier side of Craig. And if we can do that, I can find some guys to come capture the content and edit it and turn it around, and so you don't have to mess with it. I said, now, if you'll do that, I'm in. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've been doing.
And how has that affected the music?
The music is always going to be what it is.
Well, I mean, like, is it helping your numbers, I guess?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a hard piece of data to know what that return is.
Yeah.
I would imagine it helps some. Like, I started out, you know, 3 years ago at 800 people followers on TikTok. Now I get almost 200,000. So it's, you'd like to think that somebody saw me on TikTok now and then they come to the show and maybe have bought some merch. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or they've listened to the music. But you can't print it out.
Yeah,
it's hard to track.
Because some people are huge on TikTok and can't sell tickets, and some people sell tickets and I don't give a fuck about TikTok.
Yeah. You
know? Right.
Gotcha.
It's a strange dynamic. And, you know, I know Facebook is as far as the demographic is a little bit older of a demographic, but I mean I've had almost like 600,000 on Facebook for the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But that who's to say that that translates into ticket sales? I don't know. I don't. I mean,
yeah.
You can geo target all day long, but it's no way to track it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had Aaron Tannenbaum on, who is Luke's booking agent.
Right.
And we talked a lot about that. He's like, I don't know. And
you really don't know, though. You know, it's
there's some of those metrics you can put like some definition on it, but you don't. You just, again, if you did, if everybody knew, then we could all be very wealthy doing it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'll be honest. I've had a hard time over the past 10 years selling a hard ticket.
Yeah.
You know, there are some rooms I can go in and do really well consistently. But then there's other rooms that you think, for instance, Dallas. Dallas is my number one social media market on all platforms, Facebook, Instagram, all of them. But I can't move a ticket.
Yeah, weird.
It's tough, dude. Like, I can't give tickets away.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah, actually, Aaron mentioned on that podcast, he was talking about Amarillo. He's like, I've had clients, like when I first started booking, Amarillo was their biggest streamed market for whatever reason, or they were crushed there.
Yeah.
So I routed them through Amarillo, and all the shows did well. Denver did well, and Santa Fe did well. No one would go to a show in Amarillo for some reason. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, different demos, too. Like, some places are live music places, and some places aren't. You know,
yeah.
It's like we always talk about Ohio because I used to extensively go to shows out there, and you know, people in Ohio like to buy tickets.
Yeah,
you know, they go to shows
for sure. And Ohio is one of those that I always did well, like Dusty.
Yeah, I love the Dusty Amarillo.
Like, yep. I always do well there.
Yep.
But I think they have developed a great following themselves.
Yeah.
Like no matter what, who's on the marquee, mm-hmm. people are going to show up because you know.
They know it's good.
They know that the Dusty brings great, good music.
Yes.
Tannenbaum was my guy early on.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah. Did y'all talk about the Falcons at all?
The football team?
Yeah.
No, I don't think
he's
so.
He's a Falcon. Oh, at one time, we shared the love. I don't know. With the way the Falcons have played in the last decade, it's hard to be a fan, but I still love them.
Yeah, that's me with the Dolphins.
Yeah. Oh, man. But yeah. I remember one of my favorite shows of all time was actually a show that you played. It was a Salute to the Troop show in Pittsburgh, and it was you and Zach Brown Band. And
oh
it was
my
a
gosh, that was early
show.
On, dude. That was like 2012.
It was right when like Fish and was like kind of like starting to come out. And so
we were all acoustic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a acoustic show, and I still have memories of that show because you were great and Zach was great as well. And that was kind of like when I was first really digging into country music, and that sit down show with you guys.
It was
just,
like a dinner. It was like,
it was like, it was like barbecue and chicken dinner sit down show, but it was just such an iconic moment in my fandom of music. Like just getting to see you guys pour your hearts out acoustic like that.
That was a fun show. I don't remember. Obviously, we do so many shows. We don't remember all of them, but I do remember.
Yeah, it was
that
a great
one
show.
Because, I think that's one of two shows I did with Zach.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, the same promotion team that I had was working the Zach stuff. So that's
cool.
That's how I got the gig. You know.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. But everyone always asked me like. Because I've gone to a lot of shows, they're like, "What are your favorite show?" And I'm like, "One's hard," but I always mention that show.
Right on.
That one and like a Chris Cornell show and House of Blues in Vegas was up there too. But
hell yeah,
yeah. But man, it's your music has been great. I love it. To Keep Them Kisses Coming too is one of our songs that my crew of buddies that I go to a festival with plays every year. Right it's like. One of those songs that just everyone loves hearing it. It's just so upbeat and fun, you know?
Yeah, no, I love that song. There's a video. I don't know where it is. I wish I could find it. But I remember we were sitting at a table in a publishing office, and there was a pitch meeting. They were just pitching me songs. Everybody was like a round table. All the publishers could pitch me two songs or something like that. And somebody, I can't remember who pitched it, but as soon as I heard the Keep Them Kisses Coming hook at the end of the chorus, I was like, I actually turned around and looked at the guy that was with me. I was like,
yeah, we need that one. Yeah.
So, and I remember too, like, it wasn't even on the radar for a single. Out of My Head was on the radio. Mm-hmm. And it was losing steam. We were top 15. I remember Keith Stegall come in and he's like, all right, guys. They, meaning the audience, the country radio audience, wants an up-tempo love song. Let's give them an up-tempo love song. And mm-hmm. So he said, Keep Them Kisses Coming is the one. And it was like, yes, sir. You know, it was like, yeah. Done. And that's, they went in and remixed it, called it the hot radio mix. Uh-huh. And that was it.
What's a hot radio mix?
It was hotter than the record.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, it hit harder.
Yeah.
Yeah. It needed it.
Interesting. I'd love to hear the before and after.
Oh, yeah. It was less dynamic.
Yeah. Just
for sure.
Squashed and rocking.
Yeah. Just a little soft. But they beefed it up for sure.
Hell yeah. Yeah. That's a cool story.
It's neat how that works.
Well, I'm excited for your single to either be out or come out. Yeah. Missing You.
Yeah.
Yes.
What sonically, give us the vibe of this one.
It's a song. It's about
cool.
Hell yeah. It's a song about, it's kind of like a, what I wouldn't call it a prequel or a sequel, or it's more of a doppelganger of like Out of My Head. It's you know, if you've ever broken up with somebody and it's like, man, I wish I wouldn't have done that. And so you're doing things that you wouldn't normally do because you're missing this person.
Yeah.
Like, you know, first verse is like, never mind the 2 a.m. phone calls, driving by your house hoping I'd catch you in the front yard. Mm-hmm. You know, I said goodbye, but I'm acting like I still got something to lose. It's that kind of vibe. And it drives pretty hard. I'm yeah. excited about
it's like kind of like the mix of like lonesome kind of vibes, but it's moving.
Yeah, it's got some upper mid
yeah.
drive to it, and it's super dynamic. We did some cool stuff production wise. I'm excited. There's a hook inside the chorus, a vocal hook that I think people are just gonna latch onto, and I'm pumped sick. About it.
I'm getting my TikTok stance ready when it comes out.
If you do one, I'll learn it.
Yeah. man. Well, we appreciate you coming on and chatting
thank you
with
so
us,
much.
And I feel inspired, man. Just the, you know, the Drew thing and the fact that you're going on the radio, I just think it's badass.
Yeah,
it is.
It could be the dumbest idea I've had ever.
I'm sure you've had worse ideas.
But I think it's time, man. I'm, and so far the people that I've talked to, it seems that they're on my side, and it's a good feeling, and I think it's time.
Yeah, I think like. You know, if this song like crushes, like we're hoping it's going to do, and we know it's going to do, that's just good for artists.
Yes.
It's good for Craig Campbell, but it's also good for all different artists.
Yeah. So just like Drew inspired me, I would love to be that guy for somebody else.
Yeah.
100%. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there, I think there will always be a place for record labels. But man, if you can mm-hmm. figure this and do this way, I mean, there is a blueprint now. And I'm gonna run it, see what happens.
Hell yeah. Well, dude, I think it's, like I said, I think it's badass.
Right on.
And I'm proud of you, man. That's super
I'm cool. proud of you.
Thanks, man.
And I appreciate y'all having me. I follow you guys on social media, and I see all the stuff you guys have done here, and it's just thanks for having me.
Brother, anytime.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you ever need you. Anything, let us know. If you want to come play a show or come hang, let
right
us know.
All of that, yes.
Yes. Well, thank you, like I said, for being here, man. Again, one of the most iconic memories of my music history involves you and
right on.
The amazing songs you sing.
Well,
so
I appreciate it.
Thank you for making great music, brother.
I'm just doing what I do, baby.
Go see Craig live. Go stream his new single, Missing You. And my name's Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nikki T.
And we'll see you in the front row. Yeah.